I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. A new film now out from CBC Short Docs is IE. It means ant in Mandarin and Taishanese, the dialect spoken by the subject of the film, Li Yinshun. She is an elderly woman in East Vancouver who for a number of years now goes about collecting the empties in her Hastings Sunrise neighborhood, especially from one house where they were never in short supply across the alley from her apartment building. The so-called Whale House was inhabited by a number of younger housemates who liked to drink. Soon, she sought to park her collecting cart underneath their balcony. And later, she began gardening in the backyard of this house with these young people. We first heard of this story last year in a Jenny Ping piece in the Star Vancouver. As she wrote, one of the housemates, Martina Chaplek, was set to make this movie. She joins me now to talk about the film she's directed, as do the film's producers, Nicholas Ayerbe Barona and Gregory Chaplek, who is also the film's cinematographer and editor. I'll ask them about this remarkable person, i.e., this house, and the relationship that was forged between the housemates and their neighbor. You can see the film on CBC Gem as well as on YouTube. It's a lovely piece that shatters a lot of the prevailing narratives in Vancouver over real estate, community, and race. It's also just a lovely film to see in this time when a lot of us are isolating due to COVID-19. Seeing the movie might give us some thoughts about this coronavirus era, as well as how we view one another during and after it. Visit cbc.ca/shortdocs for more information. The Twitter handle is at IE the film. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program Nicholas Ayerbe Barona, Greg Chaplek, and Martina Chaplek. Mr. Ayerbe Barona, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Ms. Chaplek, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. And Mr. Chaplek, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. I'll begin with you, Martina. You lived in that house, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
About 4 years ago, and I lived there for 3 years. So I got to know Ivy quite well during that time, and I got to garden with her a little bit.
Yeah, and so when did you know that this should be a film?
From the moment I met her, I was very curious about, I just wanted to find out more about her because, I mean, she was just there every single day, and over time she took on more and more of the spaces. She first just kept her cans and collected her cans and kept her little cart under there. And then she really took over our backyard, and she was there 2-3 times a day every day. So many, many years ago, I said, we should try and investigate. But back then, I didn't work in film, and I really didn't have the tools to know how to make a story like this happen or even get funding for it. And then fast forward to this year, last year, and I started working for the Documentary Organization of Canada, and I learned a lot, and I decided to pitch the story to the CBC, and they were super happy to fund the story, and that's how it all came about.
And so how did the working relationship with Greg and Nicholas, when did that start?
So Nick and I worked together for the Documentary Organization of Canada, and I know that he has produced a film, Cadence. And I approached him with my idea and pitched him what I had in mind. And he was super excited about it, so he decided to come on board as a producer. Uh-huh. And then Gregory is my husband, and he's also director of photography, so he also works in film, and he was the editor. He was involved in so many levels. He did all the post-production management with animation. And he also came on as a co-producer with Nick. So he was super excited about the story, too. So I was lucky to gain these two awesome key players in this team.
Greg, did you live in the house as well?
No, it was before my time. But ever since I met Martina, she'd always talk about this lady, IE, who worked in this backyard when she was there. And over the years, I met the people who still lived in the house, so I dropped by and I'd seen her, and it seemed like a very interesting story. So when it started coming together, we started making it happen.
What does she like to shoot, Greg? Because she's got a wonderful countenance. She's the minute you see her, she's very friendly and warm, and that's even without, you know, the ability to communicate in terms of language.
Well, she's a tricky subject because we have to kind of wait for her to show up, and there was no way when we didn't have a translator to, like, kind of explain what we were doing. One time I tried to use, like, Google Translate, and I told her, like, I loved her or something, or, like, I wanted to marry her. We made her laugh, so we had a good time trying to figure out how to talk to each other. But she was very, very relaxed. Like, she was very chill. She was really busy doing what she was doing when we had the camera around. She wasn't too concerned about it. And we got to kind of capture her doing her just regular stuff in the garden. So it was very, very relaxed.
I have to jump in here because we initially didn't want to just film her without letting her know what we're doing. But we were filming the garden, and we were filming Adam doing the interview. And she would just walk into camera. She would wave. She would interact. And we never just pointed the camera at her. She just wanted to be in the action. And it was really awesome that we got to capture a lot of great moments for that.
Yeah, it's really funny because, like, she doesn't know what we're talking about, but we're sitting there interviewing Adam at this point in the filming stage. Uh-huh. And, like, she just walks right in and starts having a conversation with Adam in the way that she does. And she's, like, always in the background of our shots. And she's just, you know, a part of the environment. You know, she's just there.
Nicholas, this is, as I was telling you on the emails that we exchanged, it's a wonderful film because it reminds us about neighborhoods and community. You didn't live in the house, did you?
I did not live in the house, but I have had the opportunity to experience the house and all its glory, so to speak. So as you know, there are new tenants that live there.
Right.
And it's funny because it almost feels like the atmosphere was translated to the new tenants. There's something about the culture of East Van. There's something also about being young as we are. We're basically sort of, you know, it's a generational thing. And so there's this new set of tenants and neighbors that have just equally as Adam and Rory and Martina did embrace her. And in shooting with them, we kind of, like, all had fun drinking and eating and partying. And so shooting was interesting because sometimes we were in the middle of, people's just normal lives. It was very neighborly. And then every now and then, you know, you'd see that IU would show up or other can collectors also come by. So it's just kind of the way of the neighborhood, right? Like, everybody's pretty chill, and East Van has its own type of culture.
As a producer, Nicholas, was it difficult to approach IE in terms of that this was a film, and was she willing to participate right away?
Yeah, I mean, that's been challenging. I think at the beginning, in general, she has always been a part of this project. She really trusts Adam, Rory, and Martina quite a lot, even without the language issues. But you know, she has her own agenda. She definitely loves her garden. She wants to keep it safe, make sure that it works.
Yeah.
And a lot of what she does is about having a little piece of herself, and we want to make sure that her part in the house is maintained and that people continue to help her out. So that's also been a big part of the project. As a producer, we have been very sensitive about her privacy too. Lots of people kind of want to know a lot more about her backstory, more about China, more about, like, life in China, more about, is she... For example, I can tell you she's not homeless. She lives with her daughter. She says it in the documentary, but a lot of people have this thinking that just because you collect cans, you're homeless.
Yeah.
And that is not the case with her. But at the same time, I'm not going to necessarily go deep into her life and her relationship with her daughter because that's her private life.
Yeah.
And we kind of wanted to focus it on this special relationship, the relationship between completely different people that cross generations, that cross ages, and that cross cultures. That was the story, and her story is one that we're going to protect a little more.
Yeah.
So we just made sure to let her know that, look, this is about you, this is about your garden, about this house, and about you and these guys.
Yeah.
And I think she was totally game with that.
Martina, when asked about why she collects bottles, what does she tell you?
She said that when she came here, she just she didn't know the language, and she kind of just started living here, and she didn't know where to go and what to do. So she just wanted to keep busy. She's not doing it to make money, and she says that in the interview as well, multiple times, that she's not making money off garbage. I think for her, it's a way to keep young and to feel, to keep herself busy and to feel like she's in charge of her own hobbies and what she does. This garden is also a memory of where she came from, because she did share with us that she did a lot of gardening where she came from. And, yeah, for her, it's just really a way of spending her day and feel like she wants to feel useful to herself, too. She doesn't want to just be sitting at home waiting for people to come home from work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and she is a go-getter. Mm. She's a very fantastic, driven woman. And although she's so old, she's so spry. She works all day. She was carrying heavy water buckets, and she just does it. It's quite phenomenal to watch her, yeah.
Well, what does she plant in the garden?
Oh, that was always a big question, because half of the vegetables we did not know what they were.
Mm-hmm.
So we were always so curious about what it was, because she would always also leave vegetable for us once they came, once the time came to harvest them.
Yeah.
So we would have to always look it up. But she grows everything from tomatoes to bok choy to carrots, potatoes, and a lot of vegetables that I still don't know what they are.
Yeah, that's the thing, as we live in this time of COVID. One of the thoughts that I've had, and a lot of people have had the same idea as well, is to start planting, you know, your own food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just great to watch, to see what one can grow in East Vancouver.
Yeah, and this garden is, like, it's huge. I don't know if it fully came across, because we started filming the main parts of the film when it was already October, November.
Yeah.
So her gardening season was almost over. So we have some snapshots from before, but we really captured the garden more later on once we had funding. And the garden is big, and she takes more and more, she finds more and more corners that she just digs up and adds something else. And there's a new structure. Two weeks ago, there was a new structure up, and then a week later, there's a whole other corner that's completely dug up. And yeah, that garden, it supplied us with food for the whole summer. It was great, and we tried really hard to hold on to some of the parts of the garden, because she just came in there and she would take the rake out of our hands and, oh, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. And she's just, especially with Rory, he's about like 6'1", 6'2", and she's probably below 5 feet for sure, and she would just push this big guy out of the way and, like, no, like, carrots can't go beside potatoes, or, like, we don't know what she was telling us, but she was really showing us the ways. So, yeah, it's pretty great, but we learned a lot from her.
So, Greg, there's a moment in the film where a translator is brought in, and I guess, is this the first time that they're actually sitting down and talking to one another?
That scene in the kitchen, it was, like, when April comes into the scene, like,
yeah,
that's the first time that we're actually able to communicate. So we were able to capture that on the little handy cam that we had with us that day. And then that was all a big setup for the following Wednesday, when everyone got actually to sit down and ask and find out all these questions that have been burning for like 8 years.
Yeah, it's almost a moving part of the story, because we get to hear her for the first time, in a way, and she's got questions for the young people, and the young people have questions for her. It's just a marvelous moment in the film.
Yeah, and then there was, we learned a lot too, because we brought April in, who could help with Cantonese, and then April found that, like, I use Cantonese was not quite Cantonese. There's a bit of like slang in there. There's some a bit of Mandarin and a bit of English and some Taishanese, like from her region. And so she brought in Dong, who was a really great help for us in terms of translation, helped us with the subtitles of the Cantonese version to actually be able to run the conversation the following week. And yeah, it was just it was really cool to have both of them. We learned a lot.
Nicholas, when we watch the film and we think about community, we think of what it means to be neighborly, it just seems like the perfect sort of film for this time, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's kind of, obviously, it's completely unplanned. It's not like the CBC Martina had a magic ball about the kind of place that we would be right now. But I think there is something to be said about the zeitgeist. I think you're talking about gardening, and sometimes we talk about other artisanal stuff.
Yeah.
Some sort of ancient, I wouldn't call them ancient knowledge, but sort of the old things that people used to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of bring us back to our humanity, to who we really are as people. And there's, you know, when I think of Ai gardening in the middle of this giant city by herself and whatnot, it truly is a testament of, you know, the things that really make us people. Food security is an important subject right now, and she's got that down, you know. Mm-hmm. Our fears grow because our stores are closing and our neighbors are shutting down. But there's, you know, there's a sense and in that case, an ancient knowledge about how we deal with this stuff. And that's when we actually do have to look to the past and figure out how did people do things before. And there's no one better out there than your elders to really find out the old ways used to be, right?
Indeed, and in a time of disconnect, I mean, there is still room for connection.
Absolutely, that's the other part, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to be said about the fact right now that COVID is heavily attacking older people at old folks' home, and the fact that, you know, in Chinese and other Asian cultures, that's not the same way, right? You have a history of the children take care of the older people. They don't just put them at old folks' homes and sort of forget about them. And maybe that's something that we need to revisit. Yeah. We need to revisit the way that we treat our elders.
So Martina, the film is on YouTube. It's on CBC Gem. At this time, but I've just talked to Nicholas about how great the timing is for this time that we find ourselves in. But when you initially thought of making the movie 2 years ago or so, it was a different sort of story that you wanted to tell in terms of because when we used to hear about Asians, say in the media, it was about investing in affordability in the city. And I guess that's something that you wanted to touch on in terms of the film that you made, right?
For me, this whole story was about a friendship.
Mm.
You know, for me, it was. I know that there has been a big narrative in media that surrounding just Chinese immigrants coming in with money and buying big properties or whatever it was, but that was never my intention. My intention was really to celebrate a friendship between two unlikely groups. And they're so different in terms of you know, age and culture. And they're in every way possible, they're different. And yet they have developed this beautiful friendship over 8 years. So in this whole realm of documentary filmmaking, I feel a lot of the documentaries are always, or not always, but most of the time are touching on very, you know, on subject matters that are always issue-driven, like is it political, is it climate, is it crime? It's always kind of, it has this, like, negative tone to it, and it doesn't make you feel positive about the world. And I wanted to find this, really to
find and showcase this little slice of life to showcase that these beautiful stories do exist in these small neighborhoods in the city. And it shouldn't be forgotten just because there's so much bad media out there. There's also this, you know, beautiful stories still exist.
Yeah.
So for me, that was the primary reason of making this film, is to really showcase this unlikely friendship that blossomed over 8 years between these people, and just kind of throw a documentary into the mix that it's not about a sad subject matter. It's just a positive, feel-good, shed a happy tear kind of documentary.
Yeah, it shatters the narrative that the city is a cold city, that we are disconnected, and this is beyond this is before COVID even, that we don't know how to talk to one another, and in this case, they literally don't know how to talk to one another, but they are connecting, they are communicating, aren't they?
Exactly, and that's just it. You don't really need the language alone to show kindness, respect, and really cherish one another, and that's really the essence of the film. That, you know, as long as you invite somebody into your life and you allow a friendship to blossom, that if you ask two people, what do these two groups have in common, they say absolutely nothing. And yet, despite all of these adversities, it's become such a beautiful friendship. So, I hope that for some people that do have can collectors that collect their cans, maybe it has a little aha moment in their lives, and when they say, hey, maybe I should, you know, say hi or, you know, kind of invest myself a little bit more, because all these people are so close together, and, you know, they share, and yet they share a life in a weird way, right?
Indeed. Greg, have you and Martina, have you been back to the old house lately?
Yeah, we walk our dog by there, like, every other day.
I see.
Yeah, just on our route. So, unfortunately, we haven't seen Ai yet, and we're hoping to, at some point, you know, amidst this crisis, like, after this crisis, be able to...
We're staying away for now. We're actively staying away.
Socially
isolating. But yeah, we haven't seen her. I think she's probably really protected by her family too right now, because she is an elderly person.
Right.
So
yeah.
But I can't wait to hear from her what she thinks about the film. But we haven't had a chance to run into her just yet, and we can't call her, so
yeah,
that's our only way of communicating.
I was looking at the credits, at the beginning of the film, it's referred to the Whale House. Do they now refer to the Cucumber House?
Yeah, the Cucumber Palace.
The Cucumber Palace, I see. and so the new tenants and her, it's the same relationship that you guys had, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was funny because when I first saw these people move in, the house stayed vacant for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know if it was going to get torn down or if it's going to get renovated, if it was going to get sold to somebody, but indeed the landlord fixed up the house, and then months later he rented it out to these people. So I just went over there, and I saw that there's cars parked in the driveway. So I knocked on the door, and there were these lovely people there, and I just explained to them what our relationship with Ai was, and they were like, "Oh yeah, we know her too. Like, she's great. She just came in. She brought some cucumbers. She was pointing at the garden and." And then she just started gardening, and we were just so, like, it was strange, but we were so intrigued, so we just let her do it. And then she's been so great. She's been bringing us vegetables. We interact with one another. So I didn't even have to go over there I wanted to make sure that she can stay there. I wanted to make sure that the people are accepting of her. That was my motivation. But they're like, oh, yeah, we are, like, we're best friends. And I was like, oh, like, she is resilient. She will make friends with everybody because she's just such an amazing woman. Yeah.
Nicholas, Martina mentioned a moment ago this film that you have produced previously, Cadence. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So I did a feature film back in 2013 called Cadence, which is a psychological thriller. It's kind of a story set in Langley of a girl who's losing a little bit her grip in reality.
Uh-huh.
I was done with my friend Alex Lascheras and Ruben Fryer. Greg is actually a person who shot. Well, how much did you shoot, Greg? You shot like two or three different shots out of that?
Yeah, I was cam hopping a bit, and I think I gapped for a couple days.
Yeah, that too. So yeah, that's Cadence. It's sort of where I've met a bunch of different people and has kept me going.
Yeah, I understand you know relatives of mine, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So Phil Planta and Peter Planta. Peter is one of our lead cinematographers. He was there with us from day one, actually. Like, the whole film was shot with his film. And then Philip Planta is one of our executive producers.
I see.
Yeah, for sure. So features require a lot more people than documentary. So I went to school with Peter. I'm from UBC.
Yeah.
And I think, Greg, you met Phil through VFS, right? We're kind of both. Both like film school people.
Yeah, there's a couple of projects back in the day, and then a feature that I shot with Phil, Beyond Redemption, a few years ago.
Yeah,
I was one of the cinematographers on that as well.
What?
And I actually know Peter from a film my very first film that I worked on, which was very weird because I didn't know Nick or Greg back then. The very first film I worked on in prop, Peter was working in camera for, so we all were oddly connected.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I would say, I remember Peter Planta didn't used to be a cinematographer. He had more ambitions to write and direct. And then I remember I was doing my first student project, and I bumped into him in a camera store. And in my mind, I just thought, oh, this guy looks like he likes cameras. I should ask him to be an assistant camera operator for my stuff. And I think that's sort of where he caught the bug to be a camera person.
So I see, yeah.
It's funny how those things work many years later.
Yeah.
And Peter and I have collaborated in a variety of projects. And Phil, who is a very important person in the indie film industry, you know, he's also been a great mentor and a great friend.
What's next for all of you? I'll start with Martina, then we'll work through with Greg and Nicholas. You're the director of this film. Are you working on another one now?
Yes, I am. I actually just applied for development funding for a documentary. It's going to happen. It's an exhibit that's happening in Haida Gwaii, hopefully in September, depending on, you know, the COVID situation. And we will be filming the journey of a very impressive art piece that will travel to Haida Gwaii on a barge. And that's about all I can say right now about it. But this is a really great time for people to develop projects. I mean, we're all kind of on a still stand, and there is a lot of support coming from a lot of funders that are looking to develop projects and start production the second this all comes to an end with the COVID crisis.
Yeah.
So, there is a couple of other projects Greg and I are kind of working out right now. So, yeah, stay tuned. There's some cool stuff coming out in the pipeline.
And Greg, are you involved in that project that's up in Haida Gwaii?
Yeah.
I can just imagine how beautiful that part of the world is. I've never been there, but yeah. I mean, just what that'll look like on film.
Very, very excited. Haida Gwaii has always been a dream to go there and check it out. I've just seen it on film and heard stories about it. And the opportunity to work and travel is always the best. So to be able to explore it with that eye, it's going to be really a cool opportunity.
Yeah. And Nicholas, what's next for you?
Well, for the moment, I will continue pushing IE as far as I can go. This is kind of my favorite point when the movie is kind of done and then you get to go and talk to other people, show it around. It's sad that we don't have festivals anymore. That sort of world is going to be on pause for a while. But this movie was always planned for an online release, so I think that's fine by us, and we're going to still continue and try and get into whatever festivals return for the next couple of months or maybe next year. I do a lot of things. So I work for the National Film Board of Canada as a production coordinator. As Martina was saying, we both I volunteer. She actually works, but I volunteer at the Documentary Organization of Canada, the BC chapter. So there's always stuff going around there in terms of the politics of documentaries, as well as professional development courses for that organization. And we're on pause right now, but we will be doing a series of webinars for documentary exploration. But I'm also involved in the Vancouver Short Film Festival, of which already happened. It happened in January. We were very lucky.
Yeah.
And starting to plan that out for the next year, seeing how it goes. And I have probably about three more films in post, as well as a music video, which have been, you know, independent filmmaking always takes a while.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those projects were shot last year, and it's nice to have a project like IE with the CVC because they really have huge deadlines, whereas when you're in the world of independent filmmaking and you're dealing with personal projects, a lot of those personal projects sort of go by the wayside depending on people's timelines and whatnot. So COVID now offers a new opportunity to start finishing those projects. So all of these projects that are now in post are kind of like sort of revived just because all the filmmakers are readily available. But yeah, I keep myself busy, and the National Film Board keeps me very busy as well.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of projects that are still coming out. So while the film industry is reeling a little bit on the side of production because there's nothing shooting going on right now, it is very active on the development side of things, and it's very active on the post-production side of things.
Well, all three of you are doing great work. This is just a beautiful film. Congratulations on it, and I really appreciate your time, all three of you, for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you so much for having us on your podcast. This is amazing, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Well, you're all very welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much, Joseph.
You're very welcome. The movie is called IE. Visit cbc.ca short docs for information on how to see it. Of course, you can also see it on CBC Jam and on YouTube. The Twitter handle is @IETheFilm. Martina Chaplack, Nicholas Ayerbe-Barona, and Gregory Chaplack join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.